It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. William Smith grew up in South Dakota on the Pine Ridge Reservation. He was Lakota. Eventually, his family moved to Chicago, where he attended a Catholic and then a public high school. In his words, it was a dramatic change.
Nobody knew what it was like to live or know anything about being on a res or anything like that. Nobody spoke any native languages but slang. College wasn't of my interest anyway because I had decided long before I graduated high school I wasn't going to college because I wasn't going to be a priest. And I was going to do as much opposite by being in the military.
Smith was inspired by his father's service, and so he joined the Army. This was during the Vietnam War. He would serve there and in the Philippines. Back home, he ultimately became a treasured part of Chicago's Native American community. Now, Smith died in 2020, but just a few weeks before his death, he was interviewed by a high school students for a documentary about his life. The film that came out of that is called William Smith, A Warrior in Time. It was first released several years ago, but it's being screened this Saturday, November 15th at 3 p.m. at the American Indian Center of Chicago. This free event is a collaboration with the Goodman Theater. It's a 30-minute film. It's also available to view in full on YouTube. We'll have a link on our website, 21stshow.org. Louis Vasseur is a Native American producer and consultant based in DeKalb. He's presenting the event this weekend, and he also worked with the Harlem Documentary Project to produce the film. Louis, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
And I should say, the Harlem Documentary Project consists of a team of students at Harlem High School, which is in McChesney Park near Rockford. They're sponsored by Nicholas Stange, a teacher at Harlem High. Nick, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And listeners, if you have questions or comments on the story of William Smith, or you have something to say on the many Native Americans who've served in the military, you can join our conversation today at 800-222-9455. We are live through the end of the show. Again, 800-222-9455. All right, Louis Vasseur, I'm going to start with you, and I'd like to begin with some background. Native Americans serve in the armed forces. I believe the number is five times the national average. What are some of the notable ways in which they've done that throughout history?
Well, most people don't realize that Native veterans have been part of every conflict since before the Revolutionary War. They're on both sides of on the Confederacy and the Union during the Civil War, but we've served more than five times the national ethnic group in every conflict. And most of the time it's voluntary. 90% of the Native vets who served in Vietnam were all voluntarily signing up.
Why do you think that is?
Well, a lot of people just, you know, say that, well, it's a warrior society, so that's what it is. But if you talk to a lot of the guys and you read about, and gals, I'm sorry, that it was more that we have a job to do. We are defending our homeland. As a warrior, your job is not necessarily to take somebody's life, but is to protect the community, protect the defenseless, particularly the children. So with that type of mentality and ethic, it was pretty natural that people would want to sign up and defend the country in times of conflict.
Nick Stange, how did the opportunity to tell the story of William Smith come about?
Yeah, it was kind of luck in a sense. So our program's been around for about over a decade, and we've been lucky enough to partner with the Beloit Film Festival, which is in Wisconsin, just north of us. And we were up there screening another documentary we have, and that's where I bumped into Louis. And we got to talking, and he kind of said, well, he knew Native American veterans, and he loved to work together. And it's kind of from that all got started. So just kind of luck and fate, which is kind of how the whole program has worked over the years, to be honest.
And briefly, we need to take a break soon, but I understand the program started as a veterans film project, yeah? But it's expanded?
Yeah, so we got money from the World War II Memorial that was built in Springfield. They had some leftover funds, and they wanted to document World War II veterans. I was a history teacher at that time. No film production background at all. I thought, hey, this would be fun. and me and a colleague signed on to that. And then there was this great lady, Vicki DeWitt, who currently works for the Illinois Principal Association. She spearheaded the thing. And the next thing you know, here, many years later, we've interviewed over 250 vets. Our students have created over 100 different stories.
Wow.
So, as right, you can hear, I'm at school right now with the bell. Sorry about that.
No, that's all good. That's real life sound right there. Second time in 2 weeks. That's all right. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking today for Veterans Day about the stories of some of Illinois' veterans. And now we're talking about William Smith, a Lakota veteran who served in Vietnam and the Philippines. He died several years ago, but his stories are preserved in a documentary called William Smith, A Warrior in Time. It's being shown at an event in Chicago this coming Saturday. We're talking about that and the experiences of Native Americans in the military in general with two of the people who worked on the film. Nick Stange, a high school teacher who oversaw it as a sponsor for the Harlem Documentary Project. That's with Harlem High in McChesney Park near Rockford. And Louis Vasseur, a Native producer and consultant who's presenting this weekend's event. You can join us at 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. Let's listen to another clip of William from this documentary.
My job in my mind, listen and learn and try to absorb as much, as fast as I can and as thoroughly as I can. Just knowing tactics that the team used and what my role would be. I had to think as a teammate and not just as an individual. Learning to fit in and what everybody had strengths and weaknesses and help cover for each other.
Nick, you by this time have interviewed a lot of veterans, or your people have. How does that compare and contrast with the way you've heard other veterans talk about what their work entailed?
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to a lot of the stories that we've heard, you know, especially when you first get there, is this mentality of I don't want to let the team down. You know, I think the services are very team-oriented. You're not there for yourself. You're there for the others surrounded. And I think that's why you see when these ladies and gentlemen come home that they're joining veteran groups to have that camaraderie or that bond, that they get in the service. So, you know, it's very unique to have to rely on somebody else in certain situations. So, and they all take that very serious, as you kind of heard from that clip there.
For those who have not seen the film, how did being in the military stay with William throughout the rest of his life?
I mean, anybody who serves in the military, what we've seen through these interviews, it impacts the rest of their life. Sometimes it's for the good, sometimes it's for the bad. We've talked to a World War II veteran who shared a story that basically, because of what he experienced, he hasn't slept well. And this was a guy in his 80s since he was 20. So I think it's important for people who haven't served to understand that that military service changes the course of their life forever, whether that's good or bad. And it really is a career-changing, life-changing decision for these individuals.
Yeah, right, and with
go ahead.
William in particular, with William in particular, coming back as a veteran and a warrior, he has a certain status within the Native American community. Bill was always willing to help out wherever because that was his role. He was seen as a leader. He would work with kids and provide some guidance just based on his experience, both in the city, in the police department, and also as a veteran.
Let's listen to another clip of William talking about one of his experiences on assignment. This is in the Sulu Islands in the southwest Philippines, where a Muslim separatist group was operating.
We get down there, they helicopter everybody in. Well, we hadn't hit the ground long at all, hadn't built a damn thing, and a couple of rockets come in. But they had knew where we were at, and they started lighting the place up a little bit. So we had humped there, started setting up a base camp factory, but now somebody's got to go out and face these guys. Well, sure enough, who gets injured first? Shrapnel from the rockets where they hit. And so they're going to get me out of there on a medevac because I couldn't really walk. And so they put me on an ancient Huey helicopter of the Filipino Army.
Hearing William talk about his memories of serving Louis, telling stories like that, what sticks out to you?
Well, the one thing, as you got to know Bill, it was pretty easy to get to know him. He was just a great storyteller. I mean, he would go on and on and on. I would have phone calls with him that would go for 2 hours as we were preparing for this thing. But, you know, he would share stories about specific actions that he was in. There are others that he would kind of allude to, but realize that he couldn't talk about it because of security clearances. But he was always very positive about everything. I mean, he realized that he was lucky, even though he was injured, he was able to recoup. He came through several operations without being injured again. He was also just a very, very positive guy. And when you first see Bill, he was 6'4". And then in his dance regalia, he would have two eagle feathers on the top, which were another foot. So in the dance arena, he was a pretty imposing guy. And then he'd come over and then he'd give you a wink and a smile and his humor would come through. And he would just kind of relax the whole situation. And he was just very supportive of everybody.
Nick Stange, it's interesting to hear Louis mention how long those phone calls would go on sometimes, because I understand your interview with William went for 5 hours. So how do you and your students take that and make it into just a half hour story? Well, you know, still preserving the essence of what he said.
Yeah, that's the challenge, right? And then the student Tessa, when she did it, it was during the COVID years. So, you know, which is remarkable that she was able to take this 5 hour story and make it in 30 minutes. But essentially what the kids do is they'll get a transcript of the whole interview. They'll go in there, correct some of the mistakes that maybe happened during the transcription process. And then it's just listening to the story over and over and over again. And then really trying to find, you know, what is the true essence of what he stood for and trying to figure that out. And then it's just a lot of, you know, cutting stuff, re-listening to it, going back and forth. And it takes a good 3/4 of the school year to really get that foundation put, in addition to finding and doing all the research to get the B-roll footage to put over the top of the interview. So the biggest problem we have with this class is students kicking students out of school, which is very rare. The students want to stay, work. But you know, a lot of times we have to kick them out, so I can go home and get some.
Oh,
dinner.
Say, yo, like end of the day, kicking them out. You don't mean kicking them out of school permanently. You just mean go home. I gotta get dinner, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. The complete opposite of what you're used to hearing. So yeah, let me make that clear. This is after school hours. It's 5:30, 6, and they're still here working on it. And that's me, guys, I gotta go home and feed my cats.
Yeah.
So getting them out of school. So I'm very lucky that I have a class where that is, you know, that's not really a problem at all. And then Tessa just put countless hours into this. And it was a challenge going from 5 hours to half hour. And to be honest, a lot of times tears are shed over the decision what stories to leave out. Just because, you know, the goal is to serve the greater good of the film, to get that message to others. And sometimes that means maybe leaving out a story here or there that you really just enjoy, but isn't moving the overall narrative forward. So it's truly one of the more challenging courses we have at the high school here.
And what about, you mentioned the B-roll, and I think it's so remarkable, especially some of those old images of Chicago really struck me, not to mention the, you know, film of military training and archival footage. How do you source all that?
Yeah, it's a lot of research through the archives, National Archives, Library of Congress. We have some local museums here, Memorial Hall. So just countless hours spending going through all this stuff. And it's really just, that's where they spend a lot of their time. So it's just a lot of hours going through stuff, watching different videos. You never know. You might have a 20-minute video, and then you find 10 seconds that you've been looking for forever. And then the excitement the kids have, it's amazing. It's truly like looking for a needle in a haystack in some cases.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Paul in Urbana calling on line one. Paul, thanks for calling in.
This is maybe a teaching tool, and it's reference to the Ballad of Ira Hayes. It kind of captures, for me, the bad results of the Native American experience in the military. Johnny Cash did a song, an album in 64 called Bitter Tears, and it was all by Native American songwriters. The Ira Hayes tune was by Lafarge, I forget his first name, and it chronicles the story. Hayes was like one of the people in the picture at Iwo Jima raising the flag, but he came back, and when they tried to honor him in Arizona, it was rebuffed at every turn, and he died, you know, drank himself to death. And it's not a happy story, but that's why Johnny Cash called the album Bitter Tears, and I think maybe people ought to listen to it.
Paul, thank you so much for the recommendation. I really appreciate that. And Louis, let me ask you about that, because, you know, as we were preparing for this conversation, you know, we did some research. You know, it's worth noting Native Americans didn't gain U.S. citizenship until 1924. And a lot of the history of the U.S. Army in particular involves fighting against Native people. And I wonder how you and, you know, other Native veterans that you've talked to reconcile, you know, those higher levels of service we talked about with that history.
Well, as we discussed earlier, it gets down to you're serving your community, and your community is not just your family or your tribe on a reservation, but 70% of Natives live off the reservation in major urban areas. So
Chicago's a big center for this, right?
Chicago is the third largest population of Natives in the country. But you look at it, and you're protecting your homeland. I mean, it may be a section of the United States, but it's still the United States. And if you look at December 8th, the enlisted records, there were hundreds and hundreds of Native men that showed up to, and some carrying their own rifles, to sign up after Pearl Harbor, because that was their job. It was to protect your community, and this was a way that they could do that. And those who didn't go served in the factories. There's a significant amount of war bonds that were purchased by tribal governments and individual tribal members. But you just have that ethos within the community that it's my job to do this, and if I don't do it, who is?
Nick, we're coming to the end of our time together. What do you hope people take away from Bill's story, you know, especially as we're commemorating Veterans Day today?
I think the fact that Bill, other Natives, Americans were willing, like you were saying earlier, I think in some ways they had a reason not to, in some people's eyes, because of how they've been treated throughout American history, but they still answered the call. And I think it's important for us to reflect on in, you know, 2025, what are we responsible now as a society when it comes to honoring their legacies? You know, we're in a day and age where some of these stories are being erased out of museums, off of websites and stuff like that. And I think it's important for us to do in a document and to get these stories and to listen to these stories to truly understand what it means to sacrifice. And I think the Native American population has shown that with the way that they serve, and specifically William and how he lived his life. He had a presence to himself, and it wasn't a presence of, you know, I'm better than you or anything. It's a presence of, I'm a member of this community. I want to share my story. I want to make you feel comfortable. And I think that's important to understand. So I would encourage people to come out who are in the area, and you will not go away. You'll go away happy, and you'll feel good. And it's a remarkable story. And the best part about it, it's a younger person that puts this story together. This was an 18-year-old, 17-year-old who was doing this along with six other classes, and to preserve this history that's so important for us to understand.
That's really remarkable. Well, I want to thank you both, Nicholas Stange, a teacher at Harlem High and sponsor of the Harlem Documentary Project, Louis Vasseur, a native producer and consultant based in DeKalb. Thank you both for being with us. Once again, the film is called William Smith, A Warrior in Time. You can watch it fully on YouTube, but come on, be in community to see this if you can. It's in Chicago, 3 p.m. Saturday, November 15th at the American Indian Center of Chicago. It's free. We'll have all that information on our website, 21stshow.org. That's it for us today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.